Darren, thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's great to be on.
When you first started making music all those years ago, as Savage Garden, the world was such a different place for gay people, especially gay people in the music industry. Could you have ever imagined you would be headlining an event such as World Pride and debuting an album called Homosexual?
No, because honestly, back then I was married to a woman and I was so confused about my sexuality. Listen, I'm 50, so people can't see right now, but I'm talking to a very young, beautiful, person, and he's talking to a very older gay person. But here's the deal.
I'll stop.
I was 10 years of age, okay, when AIDS first became part of the consciousness of the world. And I knew that I liked boys. There's a song on my new album about this. It's a song called Music Video, right? But I was just told by all of my peers, by everyone I knew, whether consciously or subconsciously, that there was something really wrong with me. I was spanked by a school principal. If I ever used the pronoun, like if I ever said, like, if I ever said like I think he's cute or something, someone would correct me. And I learned very early that there was something about me that was unlovable, unlikable, repulsive. And so I sort of parked that away in the back of my mind. And then HIV arrived, and it was as though just through the thought crime of thinking a boy was cute, I thought I was going to die. So you can imagine that by the time I get into high school and stuff, as children often do, I was called gay before I even knew what gay was. And I didn't think I knew anybody who was gay. Of course I did. But there were no role models, there were no pop stars. By the time I was listening to music, I was a huge fan of George Michael, Wham. I had no idea George was gay. Now from space, you can see that George Michael is gay. Was gay, but I was so naive and I didn't know. And then, I had a very violent childhood. My father was the first person to ever call me the F word. It was such a horrific, violent, traumatic relationship to my sexuality that I was really internally homophobic. I hated myself. So I ended up, having relationships with women, and I thought that that's what they were. I thought that everyone secretly was attracted to men, but just didn't admit it. And by the time I was famous, my world started to really rush toward me because I met stylists, creative people, designers, other musicians who were gay, and I realized that was my tribe.
So it's been 11 years since your last album release. And obviously it's called Homosexual. You're saying it's all about your journey to get to this point. But the word homosexual itself is like quite a clinical word, at least for myself. Why was it important for you to use this word?
It's indicative of, exactly that. I mean, for precisely that reason, I think that my journey from the shame and the internalized homophobia, that word was used as an insult for me. That word from its inception through to maybe 10 years ago was used to separate, to vilify. I think the World Health Organization only recently just decided that being gay wasn't a medical condition. I think in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, being quote homosexual unquote was considered to be a mental condition. For me, when AIDS first arrived, it was considered to be a quote unquote homosexual disease. So my association with that word as a 50-year-old gay man was that it was the worst possible thing you can be. So for me to put that word on an album cover in neon and to reclaim it and use that word as my own word, I'm not asking you to embrace that word at all, but I think the language of whatever we label ourselves is so constantly changing. For example, I have no problem calling myself queer, But I can tell you, I've been kicked in the teeth and beaten up while someone called me queer. Now that's a word that young people absolutely embrace, and we embrace the F word. I still can't say that word. That word makes me flinch, but I know 25-year-olds will call each other that word as a term of endearment. The first person who ever called me that word was my father. So my use of the word homosexual is it's provocative intentionally, and it's my way of rewriting my trauma and my association with that word. But it's also, I was sort of, there was an attempt to erase who I was, I think, at a major label just because I was gay. When I was a solo artist and making music videos, there was this fear that I looked too gay. And on my the second part of that song, I say, if loving is a sin, you can count me in. Yes, baby, I'm a homosexual. It's me using the most clinical way to describe myself to make someone feel uncomfortable about saying it. It's like, if you're going to comment on my sexuality, then I'm going to make you say it in the most clinical way.
Yeah, and having it in neon lights, it's almost like a celebration. And listening to the album, there were definitely celebratory moments, especially in the tone of the music, but there were also some really dark themes. I think like my favorite song that I listened to was Hey Matt. I loved that one. And especially because it goes for almost 10 minutes. I think for like pop music, like it's not long enough. Like sometimes these tracks go for like 2 or 3 minutes and you're just like, no, we needed more. Like I think like artists like Robin and like bands like Royk Scott, when they make these really long, like amazing pop ballads where they really just let it go and have the whole song play out. There's no stone left unturned. And I really felt like that was with Hey Matt. But what is the kind of the artistic process in going through that to go, no, you know what? It's going to be 10 minutes.
I love that you pick up on that, and that you can appreciate that. Part of it was, again, to go back to like the title of the record and why I wanted to do this. I felt traumatized, right? And so part of the process of making the record was that I wanted to be able to make a record that allowed me to revisit my teenage years and re-imprint my association. So what would it have been like if I'd grown up in an era where I did feel like it was okay to be gay? And in that era, when I was listening to music, it was the era of extended mixes. It was collecting 12-inch vinyl, and a lot of those were remixes by Shep Pettibone. And I'm really dating myself here, like from like 87 to 92. These were these fantastic versions of songs that were 7, 8, 9 minutes long. And I wanted almost every track on that record to feel like that. So you had the song, and then it was allowed to just veer off into this other version. You mentioned Royk Sopp and Robin. One of my favorite collaborations of theirs is the song Monument. And there's two
Oh,
versions of that,
amazing
right?
song.
Incredible. And it just because you there's I had no expectation that radio would play me at all. And surprise, surprise, they haven't. And it's fine. I knew that when I made this record, I was making it for me. And I wanted to have this nostalgic tip to the extended mix. And I've done that too. Like every single or album, whatever we call it, every track that I've released from this record before I dropped the album, I released a version called the 12-inch extended mix. And I did that. You'll find 10-minute versions that aren't on the album that I also released because of that homage to that. It was to let the record breathe, and you'll find in the second half of them they become darker. So even the title track, like Homosexual, it's Homosexual Act One, is this sort of like present tense version of it. And I'm talking about the etymology of the word, and I'm saying, look, the way I feel about myself and my sexuality and the way I feel about you, it's so positive. I want to use this adjective, and I can't put it into words. It's this existential desire. It's this mix of leather and dirt. It's this mix of, in fact, the only way I can describe it is it's homosexual, right? And I'm trying to find a, and I can't find an adjective better than homosexual, right? And I keep talking about that. But then the song, it sort of, it segs into this thing, and I just keep repeating, it was the summer of love. It was the summer of love. It was the summer of love. And it just becomes this kind of housey, airy, synthy memory. And I'm remembering my first ever boyfriend. He was a court officer in Brooklyn, and I was 26, and it was my summer of love. I was in New York. It was in between records, and I just remember, and it was my first ever sex with men. It was just, I felt the most beautiful I ever felt, and there's no room for that in the song. There's almost no lyrics, but I got to go somewhere musically, and it sounds like a sunset, sounds like a faded sunset, and I got to sort of go there in the song. Same thing with Hey Matt, you know, the verses were essentially kind of a suicide note. I called a friend up, he wasn't home. This is all the stuff I wanted to say to him, and he wasn't there. I wrote the song. And then later on, it just becomes this kind of mantra of like me really owning my shit. Sorry for swearing, but me basically saying I'm such a hypocrite because I'm like telling you I'm so lonely, Matt. But you know what? Every time you invite me out, I don't want to come. I don't want to be there. I'm this person that I don't know if a lot of people relate to this because of the pandemic, but it's like I'm equal parts lonely, but I'm this agoraphobe at the moment where it's like I want and I crave human interaction, but at the same time, I'm stuck at home in my misery and I can't get out of the house. And there's no room for that in a pop song. How are you going to say that in 2.5 minutes on TikTok?
You need the
So
10
that was,
minutes.
yeah, exactly. Just to do my hair.
You'll be doing a national tour, the Do You Remember tour, to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Savage Garden's debut album and your solo career. What does it feel like to make something that so many people can connect with all these years later?
I feel lucky, I think, to have just survived. I think lucky to have had any impact on sort of the zeitgeist. I think it's so hard to make a memorable song. And there was a moment at Mardi Gras when I started the song I Want You. And I'll be truthful, like I never know. Every time I perform, I'm always terrified that the audience will not be into it or boo. I don't know why, but that is a recurring nightmare of mine. And I came out on stage and I think I started with the Animal song and you know, people were kind of into it, but then I Want You started and there was this immediate reaction and I was just so grateful because that song, it sort of belongs to everyone's childhood or your parents' childhood or you know, whatever it is. There are 25-year-old kids now that their parents used to play that song on the school run, or it could be Daggy, it could be Naff, it could be whatever, but it's just a part of history, and that's kind of a lucky thing. And I think 25 years later, I call it like the embracing of the perm, the way Kylie does. You know, there's this luxury, I think, of having a back catalogue where you might think you're cool, but you're not cool. You've just, you know, you've got your new record that you want to play, and I'll play some songs from that. But ultimately, there's a bunch of people that would, they just want to hear the stuff that they know, and I'm not above that. The songs don't belong to me. They belong to the zeitgeist.
Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful place to leave it.
Yeah,
Thank you so much,
no
Darren Hayes,
worries.
for chatting with
Yeah,
us
thanks for
on
your
all
time.
things queer.
Thank you.